Hello. As part of our mission fair, we're so happy to have Sally Osmer here to speak today. And I just want to tell you first that many of you do know that Nami Mercer is very close to my heart. My mother had schizophrenia when I was a teenager, and in those days there was great stigma about mental illness, and there was no place for family members to go to understand and cope with what mental illness meant in any family. So it is wonderful that today we have a national alliance on mental illness that welcomes people and gives people hope and knowing that they are not alone. Today, many of you may have read the online description of Sally's background, but I'm pleased to tell you that Sally Osmer was raised an Episcopalian, an ordained United Methodist minister, and married to a Presbyterian ordained minister. So she is well-versed in Christian theology. She is also a licensed social worker, and her history encompasses being a social worker in a family practice and a family counselor. She was in a community mental health counseling center before becoming the director of the crisis ministry of Princeton in Trenton, and she was there for 15 years in the very formative years of that wonderful organization. In 2007, she joined Nami Mercer as the executive director. She and her husband, Rick, who many of you do know also, teaches at Princeton Theological Seminary, and about 20 years ago he did attend this church and teach in Sunday school. We're really pleased to have Sally here today, and we have a little honorarium for her.
Our second scripture lesson is from Hebrews. Is that a little better? Great. Okay. From Hebrews, reading the first few verses of the 13th chapter. Let mutual love continue. Do not neglect to show hospitality to strangers, for by doing that, some have entertained angels without knowing it. Remember those who are in prison, as though you were in prison with them. Those who are being tortured, as though you yourselves were being tortured. The word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. I'd invite you to continue reading from that chapter many wise words of advice to us in the Christian church. And I want to thank you today. Thank Pat Demers and the Missions and Grants Committee, is that correct, for inviting me and having Nami Mercer be part of your grants program. The grant that we receive from the church is greatly appreciated, and I hope after you hear me speak today, you'll feel that it's money well spent. And I'm very pleased to come today to talk with you some about how Nami Mercer uses funds from organizations such as yours, and how through our work, the gospel is carried forth through our hands and activities in the community. Today's sermon is especially personal to me as I come to you as a minister, a social worker, a wife, and a parent of an adult with a serious mental illness. And I'm going to share with you some, perhaps more than usual sermons, about my own personal biography and the struggles and the twists and turns of our family life in recent years. But first, let us look to our scriptures. I was pleased that Peter, is it right, Peter, who read the 23rd Psalm, said that was one of your favorites, or your favorite, thank you. Mine too. It's often the psalm that we as children memorize, and then hopefully we can say from heart, by rote or by heart. In funerals, we often associate it with those two things. And I believe in both of these uses for the psalm. And I'm thankful for it when I need those words of comfort in my life. God leads us beside still waters and restores our souls when we are fearful. And even in the valley of the shadow of death, God is with us and comforts us. In our darkest moments, God knows our lot and shares it with us. But more than that, in this psalm, we're told that in the midst of these dark times, God prepares a feast for us, feeds us, honors us by anointing us with oil, expensive oil, and fills our cups to overflowing. God holds our enemies at bay and shows them that God will save us from all that threatens us. And we are invited to celebrate this life in love with God in God's house forever. Surely goodness and love will follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. God leads us out of the shadows of our lives and throws a party for us forever with goodness and with love. I'm thankful that I memorized scriptures such as this when I was a child, for I've been able to turn to them for words of encouragement and comfort when I've needed them. And our second text is a brief word of advice from the book of Hebrews. Let love abide. Do not neglect to show hospitality for the stranger, for some have entertained angels unawares. If our first text provides us with comfort and brings us the light of God's love out of the shadows, as I would say, then the second text gives us some advice as to how we, as people of the light, are to live as people who know about God's love and want to share it. Hebrews is drawing on the image, if you will remember, of Abraham and Sarah as they were in their travels in the Old Testament, and they welcomed three strangers and sat under an oak tree. And it turns out those strangers were the angels of God who brought to them special news of their place in God's plan for history. I think this text is a perfect one for us to consider on your mission Sunday, and as we consider NAMI as an example of your mission outreach. Hospitality to the stranger is what we do when we feed hungry people. And isn't it great that we had Matthew 25 for the children and for all of us to hear as well? Another passage which uses these similar images of service to the stranger and feeding hungry people and welcoming the stranger. Hospitality to the stranger is what we do when we feed hungry people, when we visit people in hospitals and prisons, when we go on work trips and we build houses through Habitat and other means. Hospitality to the stranger is what we do when we open our hearts and our minds and our churches to people with mental illness. Love abides. People are brought out of the shadows as strangers when we show hospitality through simple gestures of friendship to them. And we experience what I would call a God moment. Many of you, I'm sure, have experienced this when you've been involved in face-to-face mission work. There is a sense that somehow God is with you as you welcome the stranger, and it might happen at places like the soup kitchen. I know Dennis Mackay is here somewhere this morning from Trenton Area Soup Kitchen. It might happen for you when you have a conversation and you're visiting with someone in the hospital and you have a sense that this is a holy moment. And as I extend the hospitality of Christ to another, I experience that God is somehow with me at that time. I think all of us who become in ministry and are Christians can have those holy moments if we're open to them. And I would invite us today to think about hospitality to people with mental illness and to families of people with mental illness. I can say honestly that I never really thought much about mental illness as an issue for my family or for myself. It's interesting and notable, a little odd. I have a family filled with lots of people with low-grade depression, anxiety, lots of heavy drinkers in the Episcopal side of my family, which is everybody. Now, honestly, we all have that. But it's ironic, isn't it? I go to seminary. I did my CPE, my clinical training in a state mental hospital, served churches, went back to school in social work, focused on mental health, but never really thought seriously about mental illness for my family. And I also think I'm a pretty caring person, you know? I don't really look down on others any overt way that I'm conscious of. So, my husband and I have two children. They're now in their 30s, a son who's 5 years older than our daughter. And when our son was in high school, he starred on the soccer team at Princeton High and was in their studio band. His grades were up and down, but this has been a pattern, had been a pattern for many years, which we saw as an attention deficit problem. And when he did take medication, he was really performing quite well. So his SAT scores were exceptional, and we were proud to ship him off to UNC Chapel Hill, which is where all of where Rick and I went, my husband and I, and all of our North Carolina brothers and sisters. So things were launched, and never say never in family life, but I said, Richard, you'll never come home again because now you're launched to college. But that was not the case, because when we welcomed him home for his spring break, we realized that he was very depressed and withdrawn. And we sought help that week in March. And then later in June, when we got his grades, we realized that something was terribly wrong. And he was able to share with us, well, Mom and Dad, I didn't get out of bed. I went to one class on Fridays because I absolutely loved the professor, he said. So he got all Fs and one A. This was not normal. So then we got serious, getting help, because he was in a very dark and lonely place. In the next few months, he started having lots of odd ideas, as well as being depressed. And our social, gregarious son was now withdrawn, lethargic, and afraid. It took about 2 years and lots of different doctors, hospitals, and twists and turns in the shadows until we had a definitive diagnosis of schizophrenia, which to us felt like death. It seemed like the death of our dreams for our son, the death of our dreams of an empty nest, and I'm sure you parents can relate to that, and then from his side, in the prime of his life, it was the death of many of his dreams as a young man hoping to pursue a professional life as an academic like his dad. People with mental illness and their families often walk in dark and lonely paths, and others may never realize this. There are layers of these shadows on the dark paths, Struggling to get the right treatment is one shadow. Trying to afford the treatment is a huge problem for many people in our society. Struggling with one's fears about the future, will I be sick forever? Will I ever work again, we ask. And then there's the shadow of stigma, which Pat mentioned as she mentioned her mother. I think things are getting better, but stigma still affects people getting and receiving treatment and the support that they need. Stigma is all about our attitudes and our fears. It's about families such as mine, professionally trained and so forth, but never really considering that mental illness may be part of my life. And yet one in four families is affected by mental illness. We need to start seeing this as part of the fabric of any of our lives at any given time. Not as a scare tactic, but as a way for us to just face reality. We were not immune from stigma in our own lives, and we felt the shame of the words as we tried to get them out of our mouths, to say schizophrenia, to say mental illness, to answer questions directly when people said, how are you? Tell us what your son's doing now. And that's a major conversation stopper in coffee hour, I'll tell you. So we, even in the church, we became more guarded about what we would share. So I would want to make the point, without going on, that stigma cuts both ways. When we internalize these attitudes, all of us, those of us who have mental illness in our families, don't always talk about it and share it and ask for help because we fear what's out there. So we need to be more open on all sides of the issue and realize that stigma exists and that we need to combat it wherever possible. Well, anyway, my family found out about NAMI about 3 years after we had started struggling with this as a family. And we asked the question that I think is a great question to ask a doctor, is what would you do if this were your son? So we asked him that, and he said, I would call NAMI. And so we looked at him and we said, what's NAMI? We'd never heard of it. And so we did find out about NAMI, and we've been involved on and off ever since, and I'm really involved now. So, but what is NAMI? NAMI is the National Alliance on Mental Illness. It's called an alliance because it's a partnership, a movement of family members, mental health consumers, that is people who have mental illness themselves, and many others who are concerned about mental illness and recovery. NAMI began as a group of support, a support group for mothers who were sick and tired of being blamed for their adult children's mental illness. And since these small beginnings around kitchen tables, NAMI has provided education to equip people to get the help that they need, support to handle the challenges of illness, and advocacy to stop the stigma and to change policies so that treatment might be available for all. NAMI has always been a blend of support and education and action. It's a movement. NAMI wants to change the way that we view mental illness and that we understand recovery. Family member classes were developed about 20 years ago. Support groups were formed. Partners in psychiatry and research were cultivated. And NAMI as an organization was actually born 30 years ago. Now there are about 250,000 members of NAMI in the U.S. Sorry, having trouble with numbers. NAMI Mercer, which is our local affiliate, serves what we call Greater Mercer County, which includes Cranberry, Plainsboro, Montgomery, and other close to Mercer County towns. Simply put, the mission of NAMI is to improve the lives of individuals and families who are affected by mental illness by providing education, advocacy, and mutual support. And we are a volunteer-driven organization. We have a small paid staff and many groups such as yours that support us in the community. Most of our activities are peer-led. That is, they're led by family members or individuals who are living with mental illness. NAMI is very unique in a number of ways, and one major way that we are unique is that our programs are free. It's very important for you to remember that. Our programs are free. So if you send people our way, we're not going to charge them. They have enough expenses paying for treatment for their loved one. Well, 14 years ago, we called the helpline at NAMI Mercer, and we talked to a lovely saint of a woman who knew precisely what we were going through. And within a few weeks, we were enrolled in the family-to-family class, which is a 12-week educational class for family members. And we became surrounded by 10 other parents and siblings of people with mental illness, a club that none of us really wanted to join, but we were part of. And the information and the support that we found was tremendous. It brought us to a lighter place, a place where we were able to manage and deal with the severe challenges that were ahead of us. It became a place of grace. And we were so thankful and continue to be thankful to have found NAMI. We use an expression in NAMI that's so appropriate, that you are not alone. And that's what we discovered. We were not alone. In the years since calling NAMI, our journey as a family and our son's journey has taken lots of ups and downs. He hasn't been hospitalized, however, for 7 years. We're very pleased with that. And in a four-year period of the past 10 years, he was working. He's not working now, and he continues to struggle with some level of independence and requires a lot of support from us and from others. But we've all learned better how to cope. And NAMI has provided helpful information and support to our family for all these years. And now, the last 4 years, I've been privileged to work with NAMI as the director. And I'm privileged today to come and to talk with you some about how your work and our work can be a partnership. I've continued to be amazed at what I learn from people who have mental illness, as I observe with my own eyes the resiliency and the courage of the human spirit. And the main lesson I've learned is that one can never give up. Never give up. Because recovery is not just possible, it's probable today, given today's treatments. Recovery may not come quickly, it may not look like what we want it to look, but it does mean today that there will be some improvement and some restoration of health that will impact the vast majority of people with serious mental illness. So the diagnosis of serious mental illness today is not a death sentence. I was wrong. There is hope, and we need to tell people about that. I'm in a position actually to hear a lot of stories of people, and I want to share one of those stories with you. It's of a family who lives in the Princeton area, and the mother, whom I will call Jill, has a 30-year-old son who had been homeless and on the streets of Princeton for over 8 years. He was a smart guy because he saw Princeton as his family lived there, but he also saw Princeton as a relatively safe place to live on the streets, and that's good judgment on his part. Although he was welcome to go home, he was very fearful about being inside because of the voices that he heard. So he couldn't go home except to change his clothes and to see his parents occasionally. So he wandered on the university campus. I actually knew him some when I was at the Crisis Ministry. And he walked up and down Nassau Street, literally, for 8 years. As you might imagine, his parents, who were educated and middle-class people, and his siblings were horrified. They were distraught on a daily basis and worried that something might happen to him any given day or night. When they found out about NAMI, they started attending support groups and took the family-to-family class. And as they learned more, they started receiving some coaching through a state program that is we have as a partnership with ours called IFSS, which, ask me about it later if you'd like to know, it's a wonderful free program that is offered through our office. And they started getting coaching and counseling themselves about how could they deal with this problem and get their son some treatment. So finally, they came up with a plan, but they had to seize the right moment. Their plan was to call the screeners at the Psychiatric Screening Center, which is at Capitol Health, and they got the screeners to come out and meet with their son on Nassau Street and have a cup of coffee. He talked with them. He had no interest in going to the hospital. But they kind of befriended him, and they waited another 2 weeks when it was bitter cold, and he had some motivation to get into some place that was warm. And they somehow, and this was a miracle, they somehow did get him to agree to go to the hospital. And he went and was hospitalized at Capitol Health for a month, and then was at Trenton Psychiatric Hospital for a full year. Throughout this time, his family visited him at least 3 days a week and let him know that they loved him and that they were proud of him and the steps that he was taking to become well. When he was finally discharged from the hospital, he didn't go home. He went to a supported housing, a group home, where he has continued to stay. And that was 2 years ago. Now he has a job. A job. This young guy, getting older all the time, this young guy is now working in a coffee shop in the area, and he cooks for his housemates 2 nights a week. This is the kind of recovery that is possible today. What a turnaround. Now, recovery takes a lot of work. It takes a lot of work by the individuals who have mental illness and for those who love and support them. Recovery requires many supports and many partnerships in the community. And today I want to close by just mentioning a few ideas of ways that the church and NAMI can be partners so that more people can have successful recoveries such as this one I just told you about. So, some of you are familiar with, what is the guy's name, Dave? The ten reasons, a countdown, Dave, help me out. Letterman, thank you, a senior moment. Okay, I'm not having 10, you're saved from this. No 10, we're having 3 countdowns. So we'll start with number 3. So the top of the three, the top third reason that we need to partner in order to bring more people into recovery is that research has shown that people tend to turn to their faith community and to their clergy first when mental illness strikes. Specifically, 25% of families turn to their clergy first when mental illness strikes. So it's critically important that the church and ministers have accurate information and access to help for people who seek it. And NAMI's here to be your coach and your guide. Further, people with mental illness have reported in recent studies that their spiritual beliefs and their contacts with their faith community are equally important to them as are their medications, their therapies, their education about their illnesses, and even employment. So we're important. What we do as churches with people and families who have mental illness makes a big difference. We can foster recovery for people with mental illness. So the second reason, there are too many people who don't get treatment. The National Institute on Mental Health says that only 30% of adults with a diagnosable mental illness get treatment in the U.S. Only 30%. And we do have treatment that works. We have public treatment. It's not great, but we've got it, and it works. And if people don't have treatment, they'll end up like Jill's son or worse. They will be homeless. They may be in jail. People with untreated mental illness are often involved in legal matters and become incarcerated at a higher rate than any of our treatment centers. We have more people in jails now than we have in hospitals. This trend needs to change. And suicide is way too high in our society, and 90% of people who commit suicide have mental illness. So there's too much suffering out there, and we can make a difference. We can alleviate that suffering. We can bring people out of the shadows and the darkness, and we can provide for them and be guides to treatment and recovery. And we can do this through partnerships, because you are here in the community talking to one another as you gather in your various ways throughout your community here in Cranberry. And our final reason, back to our scriptures, God will bless us. God will bless us as we walk with people in the shadow of darkness. God will bless us as we walk into light and gather together and offer support to people and invite them to be part of us. God will bless us as we greet the stranger and experience God's presence and God's angels in our midst. Amen.